Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org, the community's true voice.
Filipino-American National News is proud to have on our show an author by name of Christina Oxtra. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Kamusta?
I was able to see you read one of the books that you have written last year during Filipino-American History Month at Indigenous Roots on the East Side of St. Paul. It was your book, Keep Dancing, a chapter book featuring Filipino folk dancing, Taninkling. How did you initially begin the love of passion for writing?
It started when I was a kid, probably maybe about 8 years old, 9 years old, around about that time. I wrote a poem for this magazine back in the Philippines called Musmos. I'm not sure if they're still running today, but they published it. They were asking for kids to submit their poems, and it was published. My grandma used to buy me issues of this magazine, and when it came out and she saw my poem, she was so proud. She was running around telling everybody about it. And I was excited, and that's kind of when the writing bug hit me, and thinking that, wow, I could write something that grandma can be proud of and people are talking about and people like. And that's kind of when it started and kind of evolved from there, writing stories. And then eventually my writing took me to the journalism world, became a journalist. But I love, much as I love reporting on news and facts and that kind of thing, I really, really just love writing stories and being creative.
And at that time, when you were starting to develop that passion for literature, what was the literature scene like for a young reader in the Philippines?
The books that I was reading, obviously a lot of textbooks and things, and I was growing up, most of the books really didn't reflect characters like me. So most of the stories I would write, the characters would be white characters because that's who I saw on TV. That's who I saw in popular culture. Especially when I came to America, there weren't a lot of representation. So as I grew older and looking for that, I just, through my work, I want to uplift diverse voices, and especially Filipino Americans, because we still to this day need more representation in the books that we read as adults and the books that our children read.
And you have quite the diverse background from doing my research on you. You're a military veteran. You've done work in the public relations field. A lot of times we are, as you said, there's not always a representation, or at least a correct representation of Filipinos out there, especially in, I guess, mainstream media. But for you as a writer, how was it when you saw that in the literature world in regards to representation of both, I guess, Filipinos and non-Filipinos?
I think it didn't hit me until just a few years ago, actually. You know, when you're growing up as an immigrant child, your goal is to blend in, you know, and be American, be like everybody else, kind of suppress that side of you because you want to be like everybody else. When I went to Hamline University to study creative writing for children and young adults, I started noticing that, wait a minute, who am I writing for? What am I writing? And I had a faculty member said, you know, you need to find your own voice and tell your stories. And I said, that's funny because I don't see anybody else doing that. When I was doing research at a public library, I accidentally found a book written by Erin Entrada Kelly, a Filipino American children's book author. And I read her book, Blackbird Fly, and also Land of Forgotten Girls. And when I was reading it, I thought, wow, she's talking about me. She's talking about my mom. She's talking about my family. Wow, this is great. I started, you know, laughing, crying, relating, and I started seeing myself, and I'm like, wow. And that feeling stuck with me. And I thought, wow, well, maybe there is hope. Maybe I can do this too, and I can write stories too that would make my fellow Filipino Americans and also especially the children feel as good as I do right now reading these books. And that's kind of what, you know, what propelled me and letting me know that it's possible.
And why is it important for you to write stories or books for the youth as opposed to adults?
I think that's where it starts. We need to start teaching our children to be proud of who they are, be proud of their culture. Like I said, being, you know, coming here as I was already in high school as an immigrant, I was trying to blend in and then forgetting that side of me. I don't want our children to forget who they are. They need to be proud of who they are. I have a son who's now 17, and I want him to be proud of who he is, his culture, his background. And I think it starts when you're a child, you know, you start developing that and start being not so afraid to show your culture, your heritage, your language, and all these things. Like the dance, when we were practicing the, you know, tinikling at that one event, it was so powerful to see people of all ages sharing in that joy and being proud of who they are.
And just a reminder to our listeners, on the Filipino American National News, we are proud to have Christina Oxtra, a local author who is wrote quite a few, I mean, a lot of works here. Everything from dealing with Stephen Hawking to Stan Lee to Taekwondo. Why is it important for you as a female? I've noticed that in some of your literary works that you have young females as the main characters. Why is it important to have for females, or especially younger females, to see positive portrayals of them?
I think they need more messages, especially young girls of color need to see themselves in more of the literature and empower them to step out of the box, especially those of us who have grown up in the AAPI community. Many of us are immigrants. Many of us have been told to, you know, color within the lines, to just blend in and do what you're supposed to do and be successful that way. We're not going to get ahead, and we're not going to be able to fight those stereotypes, those misconceptions, and show all the positives and educate people if we don't step out of the box, if we don't share our talents and our skills in order to do that. And the way I'm doing it is by sharing stories, empowering our girls, empowering our children, to, you know, color outside of the lines and speak up. And it's okay to do that and be heard and be seen. You know, as you know, the popular phrase, representation matters. And oh, we got to teach our kids now to start doing that.
In 2019-2020, you were awarded the Mirror and Windows Fellowship for Indigenous Writers and Writers of Color. What did that honor mean to you, and what that did that entail?
Oh my gosh. I actually forgot that I submitted an application for it and submitted my work for it. So when I got an email congratulating me, I was like, oh my gosh, yes. It was such an honor to be with other, you know, diverse authors, people of color, and be able to be in a safe environment to talk, in a creative environment to talk about our issues of what we're seeing in the industry and how we're supposed to write, how we find our voices. It was an honor, definitely, and I learned a great deal. And if anything, it also let me know that I'm not alone. Oftentimes, us writers tend to be introverts. We're in front of our desk and computers a lot, in a closed room, trying to write quietly, and you forget that there's lots of other people there who are feeling the same way and who could support you. And I think there's power in that community. A lot of the people in that fellowship have gone on to, you know, become successful, have published books. So just to be part of that community is such an honor.
I have always been intrigued by writers. I always wish I was a better writer and kept up on it. But the whole process of doing research and when you get approved for a book, what is that process like? How long are you given to captivate or cultivate a book?
For some of my books, there's two ways that you can get published that are the primary ways, which is work for hire. So you're kind of like a freelance author. I do some freelance work for hire for Capstone, which is a local publisher, children's book publisher. And there's also the traditional publishing route, you know, the big names, Random House and all those, where you sell your work to them. So there's two different processes. For work for hire, usually, you know, they know your work. They say, hey, can you write a story, a sports story? Like, well, I do Taekwondo. Would you like to a story about Taekwondo? Sure. And then they give you their deadlines. Usually it's pretty fast turnaround, usually, you know, a couple of months, and they want an outline. In the next couple of months, they want the manuscript. So it's pretty fast paced. Whereas in traditional, usually you provide your manuscript. If the publisher decides to purchase it, they also give you deadline, but it takes a little longer. For example, I have a picture book, my debut picture book, coming out in fall 2024, and that has been in the works for the last couple of years. So traditional publishing is a little slower pace, whereas work for hire, if you're freelance, it's quick.
And since we may have younger listeners listening to the show or potentially watching clips of our interview, you've worked in three, at least from what I can, quite a few different disciplines: public relations work, a journalist, a writer, a teacher. What sort of influences has this had on, I guess, you overall? Or what could you tell people that how these fields are potentially the same and potentially different?
I think, if anything, that if you have a passion for something, to pursue it, you have an idea of, I think I want to try this career field, to go ahead and try it, to see it's for you. I served in the military because I wanted to give back to the country that took us in, and my family and I gave us a great life, you know, and I wanted to give back. As far as public relations, it's all my writing. I loved education because I write for children, so being around young people all the time, I really, really loved it. It wasn't only just to help me with my writing, because then I got to know how they sound, what they talk to, and everything, but I think it's just such an honor to watch children grow up and learn. I think it has made me a better writer and a better individual. It certainly has helped me with my son, having that background to be among young people. I think it helps you to have a huge well to draw from as a writer, to have a varied background and experiences or travel and meeting lots of people. All of that is a wealth of information that you can think of it as a well that you can draw from, you know, put the bucket down there and draw from as resources for your writing.
And the one thing I admire about your work is that there are the stories that we do see in the world in mainstream media, and even as Philippine Americans, even quote unquote Philippine Americans that are woke, aren't necessarily always aware of important figures in our own history in here in America. And one of the works that you've worked on is the untold story of Larry Itliong. Why was it important for you to tell the story of a person who was very significant in the labor movement?
I didn't learn about Larry Itliong until a few years ago. You know, I was already an adult in my 40s, and I was really sad to know that where was this when I was growing up? Why was I not taught this? This guy's amazing. No disrespect to Cesar Chavez. He's done lots of great things, or Dolores Huerta, but he also played a significant role. Why was he not given the props that he richly deserved? It wasn't until the book came out for Journey of Justice about him that really propelled me into thinking, wow, we need to talk about him more. These are the kind of things that, again, we need and our children need to know about. There's so many wonderful people of Filipino-American background, and they're not just part of Filipino-American history, they're part of American history. He made history here, and we need to learn about him, and every kid, not just Filipino kids, but everybody needs to know about him and how he changed history here in America. And I think that's really important, and we need more books and more resources like that.
You said you have a 17-year-old son, guessing soon to be 18 at some point. From what I can tell, your son is half Filipino. Why is it especially important for you to teach him his Filipino culture from your end?
I guess I want him to know where he comes from, where he is. He hasn't gotten the opportunity to go back to the Philippines yet, and I hope he will. It's part of your identity. It's part of who you are. I want him to be proud that his grandparents and his mom are immigrants, that we built this life for him, you know, eventually, and to make sure that he then takes on that legacy and moves on and succeeds and do things that we've never gotten to do. And he's already there. He's done lots of things that I wish I would have been able to do and had the opportunity to do. I just want him to to grow an appreciation of where he comes from and what everybody else who has come before him have, because I think that really helps you grow as a person and helps you not take things for granted.
And just a reminder to our listening audience, we have author Christina Oxtra on the Filipino American National News this evening. Christina, what has been the response for your literary work, especially the ones that have, I guess, dealt with Asian or Filipino main character from those communities when you've been able to interact with the larger community, both locally and nationally?
It has been tremendous. It's been heartwarming. I recently got an email from a parent whose child was doing a project on Larry Itliong. Apparently he was really excited to find this book. They were given a choice in school to write about someone they look up to. And his mom said, I just wanted to verify some information because he's doing this research. Can you help us out? I was more than happy to know that there was this child there that is now doing research and learning about someone he didn't know about and now he looks up to. And he's gonna share that with his class. So the story about Larry is gonna spread. So things like that makes you realize that all those hours that you sat there in front of your computer, pulling your hair out, trying to figure out research, late nights, drinking tons of coffee, not being able to go out and do, you know, go see your friends and making those sacrifices, was all worth it. Even just for one person to say that I'm doing research on Larry and I'm gonna share it with my class, it just makes it all worth it.
Well, that's fun. That's great to hear that you've had that impact on that young reader. In regards to you, Christina, I see that you are a big fan of comic books, and you've been to Comic Cons.
Yes.
What sparked the interest in comics for you?
I had an aunt who sent me comic books from the U.S., you know, the whole Richie Rich comics and all those. And I just took an interest in them and thought, wow, these are really cool stories. And it's an easy way to read and tell a story with pictures. I had forgotten all about that, thinking, you know, as you grow up, you're like, oh, you put aside all these childish things. But my husband one day, he's a real, you know, he's a self-professed proud geek and comic book nerd. He gave me a comic book, which was called Hero Bear. And I'm like, oh my God, yeah, I had forgotten all about comic books. And it took off from there. And now you'll find us regularly at our comic book stores. I just think it's a great way to teach as well. There's some kids that are hesitant to read. Having been in education, I've seen that. But, you know, they see tons of words and text and they just have a deer in the headlight look. But you give them a graphic novel with lots of cool, attractive pictures and short little word bubbles. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, I can handle this. And it helps them and introduce them to the world of reading. My husband told me the story too, that happened to him when he was younger. He was a resistant reader, but when he discovered comic books, all of a sudden he started wanting to read more. So I think comic books, I know there's some educators that probably say, you know, it's just comic books. No, it's not just comic books. It really is an important tool in educating and learning and sharing stories. Just look at all those Marvel movies. I mean, that alone proves to you how powerful they are.
And you stated earlier in the interview that you have been working on something for maybe close to 2 years that's going to be out in 2024. What can we expect from you with that or any other projects that you have coming up?
Yes. So the picture book is called What Lolo Wants. So it's based on my experience with dealing with my grandfather's illness, my Lolo, in the Philippines, and how that can impact a child. So that's coming out in fall 2024. I'm also working on a couple of things that I'm not allowed to talk about, but has to do with superheroes. I'm finally getting into it, and I couldn't believe it. Yeah, I nearly fell, you know, just I couldn't believe it when that opportunity came out. I grabbed it when somebody said, would you like, yes, you know, before the sentence was even over. So that's also coming out in fall 2024, so keep a lookout for my name and certain famous superheroes.
I definitely, from doing this interview from the stream, I can see the smile that brought to your face. I could only imagine how big the smile was when you got that news.
Oh yeah, when I got that, I'm like, are you kidding? Really? Sure. I my hands couldn't type fast enough to say yes. So I'm really excited for that. It's a challenge. It's a big deal, you know, and you're trying to calm yourself. You got to write this. But in the back of your mind, you're dancing, you know, you're happy dancing. It's a different way of writing, but I think we can handle this. I think we can, you know, I've done all other things, so I'm hoping.
Before the end the interview for today. We like to ask some more fun, laid-back questions as we conclude the interview. Filipinos are known for singing or doing karaoke. Is there a go-to? Is there a go-to song for you?
Oh my gosh, a karaoke song. Oh, that's hard. I did do theater many years ago when I was much younger, so I do like songs from Wicked. So I try to. I'm more of a theater kind of song person.
We spoke of your interest in comics. Is there a preference between? Oh gosh, I missed this question now. After I think about it, maybe I shouldn't even answer it. But ask it. Between DC or Marvel?
You're putting me on the spot.
Well, we can move away from that question. We'll go to a different one.
I like them. I like them both. You know, it depends. It depends on which superhero we're talking about.
Is there a go-to dish that either you make or you love eating that is Filipino?
Sinigang.
Sinigang. Any reason particular why?
I just think it's very comforting. I love it, especially the kind where it has the bayabas, the guava, because we used to have a guava tree out growing up, and I just love it. In fact, when all the stores shut down during COVID and I had to make that one last trip to the grocery store before everything shut down, first thing I did was go to my local Asian grocery store and buy the ingredients for sinigang. And that was the first thing I made on our first night of lockdown, because it was just something from home, you know, and it's like a warm hug. It's just comforting. And somehow it let me know everything was going to be okay.
And our final question for the evening is that you spoke of that one day you hope to take your son to the Philippines. What is the one thing maybe out there that you want him to experience, I guess, first, or something that will be fulfilling for him out there in the Philippines?
I would like to show him some of the beaches and some of the mountains in Baguio, all of the beautiful places that there is there, because I think in the especially in the Western media, when we talk about the Philippines, they always show people in need. They always show all the city and then the traffic and all of these things, and they don't show how beautiful the country is. There's a reason why so many people go there, is because of the awesome people, the delicious food, and the beautiful scenery. So I want them to experience all of that and see all the positives and the beauty.
And for our listeners that want to know learn more about your literary work, where can they find information in regards to that?
You can visit my website at www.christinaoxtra.com, and that also lists all my social media handles, and my books are available at your local bookstores. Order them from Amazon, and or support your local bookstores like Red Balloon or Wild Rumpus Children's Bookstores.
And thank you for your time today. Continued success for you presently and in the future.
Oh, thank you so much. It was such an honor to be part of this, and I appreciate it. Maraming salamat to everybody.
Bye-bye, Christina.
Thank you.
Fresh Air Community Radio is KFAI-FM, Minneapolis-St. Paul. Online and archived at KFAI.org. The community's true voice.
This is Sound Effects, a radio playground, a compendium of radio theater, comedy, and the audio arts, with your host, Jerry Stearns. Good evening, I'm Jerry Stearns, and you've reached Sound Effects, a radio playground, where radio play is the active part of the phrase. And tonight we have a pair of classic science fiction stories for you.